Okay, guys. Okay. So, okay, so you got the... So you got the midterm. I'm sure some people were happier than others. Okay? Okay. So generally speaking, what we did, we tried to grade it on some sort of a rational curve. As I said before, if you don't feel good with your grade, you know, you can always write a term paper. Now, there were a few people that, for whatever reason, couldn't make the exams. They were flying. They were sick. So what we suggest is that they will be able to write a term paper. So a term paper in lieu of the midterm, and we will evaluate it. Now, either you can have a second term paper, or you can write a much longer that will be included for a term paper and a midterm. You write really something 30 pages. Okay? Because I really didn't want to say to start with all the mechanism of a second term paper. So you know who you are. You know who you are, were the people that didn't take the term paper. Those are the people that didn't take the midterm. The people that didn't take the midterm know who they are. If you want to have a grade, you have to write a term paper. You can have another term paper for the class, or you can speak with me and we can have a longer term paper. Okay? Now we have to deal with the final. The final will be less difficult because you'll have more time. Generally speaking, this class, the midterm is more difficult. But we try to be reasonable with the grading. We know it's difficult. We gave you a lot of questions. You needed to do it fast. But basically, we are here to teach you something. Any questions? Okay? So, what I'd like to do today is to start the second half, the third of this semester. Today I'll start to speak about pesticide economics. I cover a lot of material. Almost all of the material that you have is in this PowerPoint presentation. Now, pesticide are really important in environmental economics and in policy because they really started the environmental movement. What was the key book that started the environmental movement? Silent Spring. Concern about pesticide. And the EPA had used pesticide policy as a major element of their activity. Pesticide has a lot of issues that relate to health, a lot of issues that relate to policy, and I really start to develop some of the concepts that developed in pesticide develop in other goods. Today, when we speak about pesticide, we speak mostly about insecticide, fungicide, and herbicides. But people develop a lot of other mechanisms to deal with pests, because throughout history, the main challenge of human a lot of time was to deal with pests. Think about it. When humans were in the jungle, they had to deal with the lions and the tigers. They didn't have... A lot of our civilization was built to protect us from pests. What is a very important invention that people invented to protect themselves from pests? What do you think about the fence? A fence is a mechanism for control against pests. The trap, even the gun. People a lot of time develop tool to fight against animal, and then they found that they are so efficient, they use them to fight against one another. But so pesticides have been used throughout for a long, long time. Now, generally, there are different type of pests and there are different type of pesticides. Even today, the pests include, like for example, in California, some of the big pests are big pigs. Sometimes one person pest is another person wildlife. In Africa, what is one of the biggest pests for farmers? What? Baboons, what else? Elephants. Actually, we'll speak about something called payment for ecosystem services. We see a lot of techniques that people try to develop to control against, to protect against elephants without killing them. In the West, what was the number one pest in the West? Historically. What? The wolf, the coyotes. And now some people suggest to return the wolves. So to some extent, the issues of pesticide is not only something that you spray against the insect. It can be something big. Now, there are different type of pesticides. Now, this is really important because a lot of the debate on environmental issues is what type of control you have. You have chemical control, pesticide, agronomical control, and there are many ways. A fence, a hoe, a tractor, a trap. What is generally most dangerous, chemical or agronomical? People say chemical, but think about it. How good would it feel if you fall to a trap and get squeezed? How would you feel if you fall into if your hand get into a mouse trap? It's not fun. So none of these things are really enjoyable. And then you have biological control. What's the most effective means of biological control knows for human? Cats and dogs. Then you have new seed varieties that include genetic modified varieties. So there are many ways that people use pests. Now, the economics of this pesticide is very varied over time. Now, if we look at pesticide in the U.S., you can see some interesting results. And if you understand these figures, you can understand the economic of pesticides. Herbicides are basically are chemicals that try to fight weeds. Insecticide try to basically fight insect, and fungicide try to find fungi. What you can see, that what type of pesticide what pesticide have been growing in use over the last 50 years? Now, why did you think herbicide went up in use? What did people do before herbicides? They weed it by hand. So why did herbicide use increase? Labor cost goes up. So from my perspective, the fact that herbicide use increase is a good sign because labor cost goes up. Like a lot of time people tell people, if you go to Asia, if you go to Vietnam, in Vietnam they hardly use any herbicides. What do people in Vietnam do? 30% of the people in Vietnam are basically are weeders. It may be green environmentally, but would you like to be a weeder? Maybe one of you. But it's not a dream. I don't see any kid that want to, the dream to grow up to be a weeder. Now, why do insecticide use went down after 75? What happened in 1973? The EPA was founded. So after they founded the EPA, suddenly the use of insecticide went down. Fungicide use stayed more or less the same. Now, so what I'd like to do now is to move to a little bit of a model. And this model is a very useful model, not only for pesticide, but it, for other things. So the basic the model assumes that Y is what we call is output, Z is some input, like fertilizer, Q is potential output, and output is potential output 1 minus damage. So output is potential output 1 minus damage. And damage, is a function. It's a function of damage. It's a function of the pest. Damage is a function of the pest. Now, the pest at the end of the season is the initial number of the pest times the pesticide times the type of pest times the input times the application level. So it's a function on what is the initial pest level and the application of pesticide. So you may start with a lot of pests, but if you apply a lot of pesticide, what will happen? The damage will go down. Clear? So the basic idea is very simple. We start with a given amount of pest, and pesticides are basically used to eliminate these pests. So this is a starting point for an analysis that can lead you to a lot of interesting hypotheses. So basically, so given a pest population, the output is G times Z, which is potential output, 1 minus damage. Now, here I have M, the initial pest population. Now, profit is potential output, P times GZ, 1 minus damage, minus the cost of alternative input, minus the cost of the pesticide, minus the fixed cost of the application technology. So if you look at the optimal level of the pest, of the alternative input, it's where the value of marginal product, which is P times DGDZ, 1 minus damage, is equal to W, and the optimal level of the pesticide is again where the gain from reduced pest damage, which is minus P times potential output times the change in damage because that is associated with the pest, is equal to the price of the pesticides. So the second equation has several elements. The gain from pesticide is reduction in damage. So the damage is price times potential output times the marginal change in damage because the population decline times the decline of the population because of the pesticide. And this gain has to be equal to the price of the pesticide. So we have several elements that are operating together. Now, sometimes you add to take into account there is something that is called application cost, that there is a fixed cost of application. So if you don't have a lot of pest, then don't apply because you cannot even cover the application cost. Now, so these basic principles are really behind understanding a lot of the ways that we deal with pesticides. Now, to understand pest management or to understand medicine, you have to understand biology. And there are a lot of complex issues that you have to deal when it comes to biology. For example, predator-prey relationships. What do I mean? Sometimes you may have more than one pest. So suppose you have two pests. One pest is causing you trouble. The other pest is also causing you trouble. But the second pest also kills the first pest. If you are not very effective in controlling the first pest and you're controlling the second pest, then the damage from the first pest can go up and it can be a disaster. Actually, it happened in California in the past. People controlled a cotton damage agent that's called the pink bollworm, and the pink bollworm wasn't that bad, but it controlled something much worse. And once you destroy the pink bollworm, we couldn't grow cotton in California. Clear? So a lot of time when you look at the value of marginal product of the pesticide, you have to look at the cost or the benefit in affecting other pests, MCN2, plus the price. So the cost of applying extra pesticide is not only the cost of buying it, but the cost of the extra damage that it will cause, that it will generate. Clear? So if you have a pesticide that controls against other pests, you may like to protect it. Now, another big issue is the issue of preventive versus responsive application. Now, generally speaking, when it comes to human health, what is preferable, preventive or responsive application? Why? What? Usually cheaper. When it comes to chemical pesticide, what is better, preventive or responsive? Responsive, why? Because a lot of time, if you take preventive, you may spray and the pest won't arrive. It's actually true a lot of time with people. Like if you take a really strong medicine and in days when you are not sick, it may not be good for you. Clear? But one of the big problems with pesticide is that farmers sometimes tend to use too much preventive and too little responsive. Why do people use to tend too much preventive and too little responsive? Why do you think so? Yeah, first thing, people want to be sure that their crops are not vulnerable. Secondly thing, in order to have responsive application, what do you need to do? To monitor. Monitor is costly. So the more advanced the monitor strategy you have, the more ability you have to move from preventive to responsive. Now, a lot of time is true with human. You know that now you have time-release medicine that releases medicine exactly when you need it. You know that now people try to insert a camera in your body to know exactly where to apply medicine. So this idea of being precise is part of pest control and it's part of medicine. Because if you are not precise, you spread a lot of bad stuff where it doesn't belong. Now, there is a technique that is called integrated pest management that basically says that you really have to have people that monitor the field, monitor the pest, make sure that they know what's going on before we start applying chemicals. This technique called integrated pest management, IPM. How many of you heard about IPM? And this technique works in some crop and doesn't work in others. It works when labor costs and monitoring costs are low. It doesn't work when monitoring costs are very high. So, to some extent, so from an economic perspective, in many cases it makes sense if labor costs are low, in others it doesn't. There is also a notion that's called the economic threshold of application. Sometimes you really have a significant amount of application cost. So there is a minimum amount of pests that warrant application even before you look at the marginal condition. And this is called the economic threshold. People a lot of time in the past applied pesticide whenever they saw pests. But that was wrong because there were maybe two or three mosquitoes, and when you apply against them, you spend a lot of resources. Now, what determine, what are the factors that determine the economic pest? The price of the output that you save times the damage, and the gain has to be equal to the cost of the pesticide. Now, if you look at pesticide as from a perspective of health, the more severe the problem that you want to address, the more likely you are to use a medicine. It's the same thing. If you think that one cell may cause you a lot of problem, you may get a pill. If you think that one cell doesn't cause a lot of problem, but the application costs are high, you don't use a pill. Now, one of the key elements in pesticide is resistance. Now, by the way, you can really get a degree only in pest control. There is a discipline called called entomology. That's what they do. They teach you how to manage pests. All this element is about 50% of agriculture, a lot of veterinary medicine, a lot of regular medicine is really dealing with controlling of pests. So basically, I really superficially provide you with some basic principles. One of these principles is resistance. What's the idea behind resistance? What's the idea behind? How many of you heard about the notion of pest resistance? What's the idea behind it?
As pests are exposed to the chemical, the subsequent generations will be resistant to it. They won't be damaged by it.
No, as pest population exposed to pesticide, the next generation will be less vulnerable. Now, what exactly happened? Generally speaking, different pests have different genes. So you may have one or two pests in the population that are not vulnerable to a pesticide. So suppose you spray. What happened? These people survive. So suppose you have a mommy pest and daddy pest that are not vulnerable to the pesticide. They have a lot of babies. The babies basically swim in the pesticide and bingo. What? It's natural selection. Now, so what do a lot of companies do? They use two pesticides. Now, some pesticides don't have resistance. Now, what is the problem with pesticides that are very strong? They're toxic to human too. So a lot of time people develop cocktail of chemicals that are not dangerous to human. But resistance management is important. So one principle of resistance management is you try to use pesticide as little as possible, because every time that you use pesticide, you solve a problem now, but you generate a problem for the future. Now, one of the most challenging issues is to identify pesticides that don't have a lot of resistance. Now, some of the pesticides, like, how many of you heard about DDT? Now, DDT didn't have a lot of resistance. The only problem, was DDT bad for people? No. No. Why was DDT so popular? When I was a kid, people would spray on people DDT. Because when I was a kid, people, the Lord, you know, you have lice, and, you know, and, but DDT was very, very bad to life, to wildlife, to birds. It will destroy the eggs of birds. So Zedrinet, it was eliminated. But one of the things that people do, chemists do, is that they try to find treatment that, it's like medicine, that basically does what it's supposed to do without doing other things. Now, another thing is very important to remember, that one person pest is someone else's source of income. This is a study that I actually did. In California, we have a lot of feral pigs. These are really huge pigs that they basically were roaming in the middle of the Sierra in the wheat fields, and they destroy everything. So how did farmer try to control the pigs? What do you think? Either shoot them or mostly trap them. Now, what happened when they trapped the pigs? Once in a while, a human being would trap. It was really sad. So one day, someone decided, God, instead of trapping them, let's shoot them. But instead of shooting them regularly, let's get hunting license. Today you have more pigs in the Sierra than ever before. And the farmers actually are making much more money from ever before. Why? Because they have license for hunting. Now, whatever you may think about hunting, I'm not a hunter myself, but the point is that it's a solution that some people develop to a problem. You understand? And to some extent, the farmers have more wheat. Hunter had whatever they want. The county has more income. Now, it's like with the elephant in a... Maybe I'll tell you the story of elephants. It's a little bit better. What happened in... I was working in Kenya. And in Kenya, they have... a river, and the elephants, big elephants, are coming to the river, and you have a farmers, and they grow flowers, okay, or they grow tomatoes. So what happened? The elephant will come through here and destroy the farmers' flowers. So what the farmers will do, shoot the elephant. So some groups, so some economists or whatever decided about a solution. Let's buy a certain, so you have a lot of fields, let's buy a certain amount of land, buy it from the farmer, and develop a road through which the elephant will be able to go to the river. So the land is expensive because the farmer will make good money. So basically there was a deal that every hotel in the area will spend $2 a day for every tourist to pay the farmers to give the to take about 50 acres of production so the elephant could go to the water. The only question was to tell the elephants. What do you think happened? No, the elephants figured it out. You know, the farmers basically put signs and put barriers, and the elephant, you know, once you show the elephant how to go to the fields, you know, they have good big heads. So they remember it forever. So this is really a good example of a program called Payment for Ecosystem Services, where you basically keep tourism and farming at the same time. Clear? But the basic point is the definition of pest is a relative definition. Okay. So now I'd like to look at some of the economics of pesticide cancellation, and this is really practical things. So generally speaking, in the United States, the way that you operate with pesticide is that first, suppose you have a company that develop a pesticide, a chemical company. If you develop a pesticide, can you put it in the market and sell it to people? What do you think? No, you have to go and you get the approval of the government. And the approval process is quite expensive. Who is a big beneficiary of an expensive approval process?
Big companies.
The consumer, but also the big companies. So sometimes the process may be too costly for its, maybe actually too costly because the companies don't want competition. So if, for example, an environmental group says, you have to check against this, the small company says, no, it's safe. The big company says, okay, because they know that they can control the market. But anyway, so you have a chemical, it passed all the tests, it's considered safe, and then what happened? Suddenly something bad happened. Now, if you discover, you can prove that the pesticide is causing cancer, what will happen? It will be banned immediately. No questions. But suppose you don't prove that it causes cancer, but you don't like it. It may cause cancer. Then you basically have to decide about a cancellation policy. And that's where economics enter to the picture, because people say, okay, you have as an economist to assess what will be the cost, social cost of cancellation of pesticides. So basically, if you're an economist and you have to assess what will be a cost of cancellation, you basically have to look and to see how it will affect the supply of a certain crop, how it will affect the cost of the certain crop, what will be the effect on market price, what will be the effect of consumers. You basically do economic analysis. Now, the traditional approach was to go to an expert or to an agronomist or to do some econometric studies to say, now suppose we don't use the pesticide, what will happen to output? How much output per acre will go down? What will happen to cost? And you say, okay, so suppose you will use a chemical, output will go down by 20%. If the price of output is $10, it will be $10 times the reduction in output. The cost will go up by 10%. You take the cost, so suppose you produce 5 tons and now you produce 4 tons and a ton costs $100. You lose $100 because of extra loss of revenue and $50 because of extra cost. Does it make sense, this type of calculation? What's wrong with this calculation? So basically, the calculation is what is the reduction in revenue minus what's the extra cost. What do you think? Now, let's look and see. This is quantity, right? Okay, this is price, and this is quantity. This is supply, this is S0, this is D. Now, suppose you discover that you have a pest damage. What happened to supply? It goes up or it goes down? If you eliminate the pesticide, what will happen to supply? It costs up or down? It will cost up, because you have the same price, you have less quantity. So what happened to quantity produced? What happened? So you started here, and you move here. So what happened to the price? What? Price go up. So did producer lose? Did producer lose? Not necessarily. If the demand is not very elastic, actually producer might have gained. Did consumer lose? For sure. So if you use this approach that you say, now let's look at the loss, at the loss of quantity and assume price given, then you basically assume that producer would lose. But if the demand is inelastic, you have less quantity, but you have more price. And then, actually, consumer may gain. There are several examples where this type of stuff happened. About 10 years ago, we have a huge hail problem. So farmer lost half the oranges in California. Now, but the price of oranges tripled. So did farmers make money? Now, so the farmers went to the government and came to the government and said, we lost half our oranges, so we want compensation. So the government asked them, how much should we pay you? And they said, okay, the price now is $3 a ton, and we lost, I don't know, 500 tons. So pay us three times the loss. So the farmers actually had the best year in their history because they get more revenue to start with, okay? And they got from the government compensation that were bigger, that were equal to the revenue. Now, what is your job as an economist in a situation like this? As an economist, you say, gosh, you shouldn't pay the farmers because they actually made money. What happened when the farmer knows that you said it to the government? They want to kill you. But you understand the point? That when you look at the impact of cancellation of pesticide, what really matters is the elasticity of supply and demand. But so consumer always lose, producer may lose or win. The main gainer is the people that don't suffer from the externality. So it's very, very important to recognize the price effect. I have some examples of studies that I did. Several years ago, people wanted to eliminate pesticides from California agriculture. They said, okay, let's eliminate pesticides from California agriculture And someone said, let's look and see what will happen. So if you eliminate pesticides in California, agriculture there, or in the U.S., wheat yield will go down by 25%. Wheat production will go up by 9%. Why will wheat production go up by 9%? Less than yield. What happened if the output of wheat will go down? What happened to the price? Will go up. So farmers may grow more acres of the same crop. It's clear? So the price goes up, the yield per acre goes down, but the production goes down less, and the main losers are buyers of wheat from the United States. So what will happen in developing countries? People will increase production there. Sometimes it may be good, and sometimes it may be bad because they will cut trees in the middle of the jungle to produce more wheat. Clear? Now, if you look at rice, you can see that in rice, the yield loss will be huge because without pesticide, production of rice may go down by 60%. But most of the suffering will be to foreign consumers. Domestic consumers would suffer some. Now, a crop like sorghum that doesn't suffer a lot of yield actually may produce more. So you can see that some of the interesting thing is that a lot of time, like the farmer of soybean, actually will benefit because what will happen to the price of soybean? Will double. So this type of analysis tells you some interesting story, that when you eliminate a pest control, output per acre may decline, but the acreage may increase, price may go up, so farmers will benefit, and consumers, domestic or international, may suffer. Generally speaking, almost any policy that regulates farming in America doesn't affect domestic consumers very much, but it will affect export. And if it affects export, who will suffer? People abroad, and many of them are very poor. Clear? Now, this is a little bit more complex. In many cases, the government affect farm policy by setting a minimum price. It's called a target price. So if the government assess a target price, and now suppose, then people say, gosh, what will be the loss if you eliminate pesticide? So suppose you start, the initial supply was S1 and you move to S2. If we were social optimum, we would have, under S1, we would have been at which point? Q star. Clear? It will be at Q star. But in reality, when you have a subsidy and you know that the price could never go below PS, we will be at M. Clear? We'll be at point M. Now, suppose that you move from S1 to S2, you move from M to B. Clear? Now, from a welfare perspective, is it better or worse that we move from M to B? When you were in M, there was incredible excess production. It was equal to M, C, F. When we move from M to B, there is some loss. The excess production is much, much smaller. Actually, here you have, here you should be at a point that is a little bit to the left of B and E, but you can really see that you are much closer to the optimal solution than before. So the price that you so if you try to assess the damage to the farmer, you have to assess, or to society, you have to compare the point C with the new optimal solution rather than point M and B. Because before, when we were in M, you started with a lot of excess capacity, the price was too high, and already there was too much production. It's clear? So sometimes when you have a subsidy and you eliminate the pesticide, by itself it may be a social gain, because when you have a subsidy, you produce too much anyhow. The amount MCF is excess production. So when you eliminate the pesticide, you actually may do you may improve the situation because you reduce the health effect, and you reduce excess production that wasn't efficient to start with. Clear? So I think this is one point that is really important, that when you have a agricultural policy or any policy, pesticide pest control is not very good. Now we'll speak a little bit about the health risk of pesticide. You remember I spoke about managing risk? This is one application. Now when it comes to pesticide or any other environmental health problem, there are different types of risks. There is risk to health, risk to workers, and risk to the environment. And the risk is divided to acute versus chronic. Acute risk is risk from cancer or death or poisoning. Acute is from poisoning. Chronic is from cancer. Now, many chemicals have what's called short half-lives. They may be operated, be very effective for 2 days, and that's it. And this type of pesticide are maybe very toxic, but they may not be bad because after 2 days they disappear. Other pesticides may have long life, and they may be what's called chronic. Now, generally speaking, we have three types of pesticide damage: food safety, worker safety, and environmental safety. From human health perspective, what's the most problematic? What do you think? Worker safety. Food safety is really rare that people get sick or anything for pesticide. Really, really rare. Why? A lot of the pests are a spray and you can wash them. The half-life is small. Generally, the dosage is such that it's really not harming if you eat them. But if you are a sprayer, you are exposed to much larger quantity. So generally, most of the human health effects of pesticides are among sprayers. And generally, the few number of pesticides that were eliminated because sprayers suffer from certain diseases. On the other hand, environmental safety can be quite big. Sometimes you have some pesticide that may not damage the human, but may damage the environment and vice versa. So a lot of time when you look at the regulation, a lot depends on how much you value human versus how much you value the environment. So generally speaking, there are different types of policies to deal with pesticide. First is registration. Every pesticide has to be registered, and the result of the test have to be introduced. And generally, you try to introduce them so there is no risk. If something is banned, if something is bad, it's being banned. Some pesticides, you develop direct control. For example, you say that you cannot be in the area where you spray the pest for 2 or 3 days. It's called re-entry regulation. Or that you, after you spray the pest, you have to wash it. Or that people that spray a pest have to wear protective clothing. Now, in developing countries, there are quite frequent cases that people die from pesticide. And the reason is that two chemicals, one of them is paracillin, were the main tool of choice for people that committed suicide. But generally speaking, the main issues, in my view, in pesticide has been environmental problem like DDT. In terms of safety, value of life, the implied value of life of pesticide is about $40 million a year. A $40 million a life lost. The implied value of life in generally in the U.S. of environmental regulation is $6 million. Namely, if you spend $60 million, you can save a life. In the pesticide, if you spend $40 million, you can save a life. But generally, if you use less pesticide, you may have less food, and then there is an indirect effect on human life. What is the cost of life from improving roads? I think I told you. $1 million. So if you spend $1 million on road improvement, you are likely to save a life. If you spend $6 million on many activities, you are likely to save a life. In pesticide, it's $40 million. In airplane, is how much is it? Value of life in airplane? About $200 million. You know? People don't realize it, but it's really... Airplane, with all the problems, are relatively safe. Except Philippine Airlines. Now, the other thing is that if you look at pesticides, in the first several years of pesticide, actually you may have a situation that the use of pesticide can be suboptimal. Why? You go to our, this is marginal cost, this is marginal resistance cost plus marginal externality cost. So the optimal level of the pesticide may be A, post A. You remember that our simple externality analysis can work like a charm for something like pesticide. So the optimal solution is A. Without policy, you will be at E. But in reality, when you have a new pesticide, the companies that develop the pesticide is a monopoly. Why? They have a patent. So you may start in a point like C, where you have CB rather than in B. So in the early life of a pesticide, if you may have underuse, and in the late life, you may move to E, you have overuse. What happens when a pesticide becomes older? It becomes generic, and then suddenly people start using it like crazy. Now, if you look in developing countries, you can see some really interesting issues. In many developing countries, there is underuse of pesticides, in some cases because they don't have access, and in other cases there is overuse because pesticides are subsidized and people may not be educated. So to some extent, developing policies that increase the efficiency of pesticides in developing countries is important. For example, introducing IPM, monitoring, etc. In the United States, people now, because of environmental regulation and also because of cost, people now, there are professional pesticide advisor and pesticide applicator that make sure that you use pesticide in a way that it's safe. In developing countries, in some of them we try to do it, in others you don't do it. So you have three types of countries. Countries that underuse pesticide at all, countries that overuse, and countries that use more or less the right amount. But developing policies and institutions to do it right is a big challenge. Now, generally speaking, in developing countries that are tropical, the use of pesticide is very high because pest damage is very low. In California and in the Central Valley, you don't need to use a lot of pesticide. Why? What? Why a priori you don't expect to use a lot of a pesticide in the Central Valley? What is the Central Valley? A desert, which means it's dry. Desert has two good things from pest control. It's very dry, so there aren't a lot of pests. And the temperature at night is very cold, so the pests get killed. If it's humid and it's not, and there is no difference between day and night, you have a lot of pests. So the Central Valley gets water from the north, as very little pest. Actually, the border of the Central Valley is spread. So if you're in the Central Valley, you can exercise very easily organic farming. But if you're in Mexico, you're not in a desert, you're humid, you cannot have this exercise. So pest damage is different. Where is bigger, in China or India? India, why? India is humid. You know, in the United States, where it's easy, where you have more pests, in the California or in the South? So to some extent, the environment determined what type of how much pest you have. So it may be that for California, the best thing in the world is organic. I'm not sure that's true for Georgia. For sure, it's not true for Mexico. Now, the other thing about pests that you may eliminate pests, but since people generally like to eat, what happened? Yield go down, so what happened? You left deforestation. So when you look at the environmental effect of pesticide, you have to say, okay, I eliminate this pesticide, I don't like it. If I eliminate it, we will have more deforestation. So this is a consideration that one has to take into account. So, I think I'll speak about GMO later on. A lot of the things that we spoke about before, the model of risk, how to compute risk, apply here very well. So you can really look at pesticide, at some of the issues of worker safety. So you can apply less pesticide, apply more safe pesticide in contamination. You can have protective clothing, and you can have medical treatment. So you can reduce the damage from pesticide to very low level by having a good procedure. And we study in this class how you can calculate the health risk under different policies. And there is a lot of work about this set of issues. Okay, so I think that's basically it. We apply all the models for this stuff. What I expect you to know is to understand the basic principle, and it will be part of the homework assignment next time. Okay, thanks.